Bom dia, boa tarde. Welcome to another episode of the PortugueseSoccer.com podcast. I'm your guest host, John Neves, back here again to talk about my favorite subject, your favorite subject, and that is, of course, Portuguese soccer, Portuguese football, whatever word you use in your part of the world. Episode 191. It was a good and bad week in Portugal. The bad, unfortunately, was a very disappointing week of European competition. Only Braga, in an incredible performance, was able to walk away with the 3 points. Everybody else lost. The World Cup, it's official. Portugal will be a part of the countries hosting 2030. We, of course, have match day 8 of the Liga Betclic, and I'll be kind of doing a review of that, as well as the second division report. The day I drop this episode on Friday, Roberto Martinez will do his call-ups. I'll give you some thoughts about that in the international break. And then, of course, I'll also have reports on the Big Four. Yes, I'm saying Big Four, as well as other information regarding Liga notes and women's football. But let me, first of all, start off really on a positive note with the World Cup. It became official on Wednesday that Portugal will be joining basically Morocco and Spain to host the majority of the matches. The first group matches involving 3 countries from South America will be played in South America, with Uruguay being the first one, and that's obviously to help celebrate the 100th anniversary of the World Cup. But Portugal is in the party, and they will be hosting yet another major event. Look, it's not really a surprise. I think we all knew it was coming. I had heard, spoken to various people who behind the scenes in Portugal, people that work at the club level, people that work at the federation level, were already working on this, and everybody pretty much knew that it was going to happen 100%. And as a result, it now does happen, and as a result, Portugal's involved. And look, it's a great thing, first off, because Portugal qualifies now automatically for the 2030 World Cup, so we don't have to go through qualifying. However, the downside to that is you go 2 years without playing any real competitive matches. And when you think about our national team, although we are cruising right now and doing very well in the Euro qualifying, trying to find good matches, friendlies, when you've already qualified could be a bit of a challenge, but that's something to worry about in, you know, 6 or 7 years. But let me also say that, you know, Portugal hosted Euro 2004. I remember it very well, again, from all my over 25 years of doing PortugueseSoccer.com. You know, I got a chance to go to Portugal. I saw Portugal-Spain when Nuno Gomes scored that goal in Alvalade. I saw various games, and then I saw games that didn't involve Portugal. I went to see the Czech Republic versus Germany. I thought it was great that I got a chance to check out Germany in person, and it was a great event. Obviously, we know what happened with Portugal losing in the final, but it built the big stadiums in Portugal being a part of this international thing. Although it was only Portugal hosting it, of course, these days it feels like all the bids now are really more than 2 or 3 countries, as we see with North America coming up with Canada, USA, and Mexico. But Euro 2004 brought a tremendous foundation to Portugal. We know that, of course, Dragão, Luge, the new Luge, and, of course, Alvalade were all built. The opening Alvalade was when Cristiano Ronaldo shined. And, of course, the rest is history with Manchester United signing him. The Dragão, everybody knows, it was Lionel Messi's first professional match when they did the debut of the stadium. And look at where Messi and Cristiano have set themselves in history, and look at where opening up Sporting and Porto Stadium, what it did. Of course, Benfica Stadium over the years has been involved in many, many events. And so Euro 2004 brought a lot of great things. But it also brought stadiums like Leiria, Coimbra, you know, stadiums that don't get used very much, like Algarve. I think the big four stadiums, Braga, Bessa, I think Barcelos, some of the stadiums that were built around the tournament of 2004, have managed to been put to good use. But there are a lot of stadiums in Portugal from Euro 2004 that haven't been put to good use. And then you look at Portugal's history. We've hosted World Cups on an emergency basis. Remember after the World Cup, you know, remember, excuse me, after COVID, when they brought the quarterfinal teams to play throughout Lisbon. We remember, of course, the Champions League final that was played in Porto. What was that, a year or two later? So Portugal has always been in the middle of some of the biggest events in the world, not just with our players, but with also hosting these facilities. So it makes a lot of sense to see Portugal host, and it's going to be a great tournament. Unfortunately, these days, again, it's just not, it's very hard, although I know Germany's doing it next summer with the Euro. For countries basically to host a tournament by themselves, you've got to spend millions upon or even billions of dollars to build infrastructure. You've got to build stadiums. You know, when I look at Portugal's issues with the housing crisis in Portugal these days, with the teachers going on strike, with the issues with the shortages of doctors, I just don't ever see Portugal in the near future building a brand new stadium. But they have these stadiums from Euro 2004 that will obviously be fixed up, and they will host, and of course, these big stadiums in Portugal with the big three, latest I heard. So congratulations to the Federation for landing this. I think if you're Portuguese, you should be very proud. This is a very fantastic moment in history to be a part of hosting a World Cup for the first time ever. So I wanted to start off this podcast talking about that. Disappointment. Three of four teams this week lost in European competition. Braga, fantastic result, down two goals to come back to win it 3-2. In my opinion, one of the three best moments in Braga history, the best moment ever in Braga history, was back in 2011. They went to Stadio de Luz in the semifinals, by the way, of the Europa League. They played Benfica, went to the Luz, lost 2-1, came home, scored one goal, 2-2 aggregate, but they had that away goal, and Braga advanced to play in their first European final, the Europa League at the time. They went out to play Porto, of course, in Dublin. That was probably the greatest night in history. This night, coming back down, because it is a Champions League match and because they came back down being two goals, is no doubt one of the great nights for many Minhotos, many people up in Minho, to remember this special night. But Braga, you know, I say big four because not necessarily in terms of size of the club or resources, but because I think they could compete. And that was a very big moment for them. Even though in Liga they're 6 points behind the top, this is still a club that I think is something to be reckoned with. And as far as the other clubs go, disappointment all around. I was really disappointed in Sporting. I know Atlanta just looked like the better team, but Sporting did not lose a match up to this point. And what happens, they finally lose at home. And it seems like Italian clubs lately have been getting the better of us. It's been very, very disappointing. Porto, of course, very disappointed in some calls. So was Benfica Schmidt with the lack of a PK call. But you know what I always say, it's the same thing with Liga, is, you know, when you have all this talent on your team and you're slapping release clauses of 50, 60, 70, 100 million on players, you got to find a way to score at least one goal. You know, I mean, you're not going to score three or four goals against a European giant like a, you know, like a club like Barcelona, of course. And you're not going to go into the San Siro and score four or five goals against Inter or even Milan. But you do have talent, and it's kind of disappointing that both losses this week with Benfica Porto also came with the fact that they just, you know, they just didn't score. And, you know, Sporting did score, but it was via PK. So, you know, and the other thing also I have to say, you know, I've talked about this in the past with my podcast. A few of you have acknowledged it. You know, think about this in a minute. In 2011, we had three of the four teams in the Europa semifinals were Portuguese, and then Braga eventually advanced with Porto to play in the final. We had back-to-back years when Benfica made it to the Europa League final. Those were great years. And why were those great years? Want to know why those were great years? Because back then, they had the system where clubs could invest in the players. And it was a different time. And as a result, you had these tremendous amount of players that were coming to Portugal because of the investment scheme that was, you know, used, where people could invest in players. And then, of course, we saw that Bruno Duque Carvalho at Sporting. He didn't like it. And by the way, I'm literally blacking out right now on the exact term, but I think you know what I'm talking about. When we had all these great players and there was all these investment in the players, a third-party system, basically, you know, third parties getting involved. And once they stopped that, there was a lot less money in investing, and clubs had to basically invest on their own to get players. And of course, here we are right now. I think Portugal in the last 10 years has gotten a little bit weaker. It's been shown in Europe by the fact we already lost the Champions League spot. But the third party transfer system, I think, has really wreaked havoc with Portugal. Now, look, it wasn't the greatest thing to have clubs forced to sell players because investors wanted it. Of course, that was not the right thing. But we, you know, will a Portuguese club make it to a Final Four, a semifinal? Will it make it to a final? Maybe the Europa Conference League, maybe. Or actually more like the Europa Conference. Well, maybe the Europa League too, although we've had our opportunities and just haven't made it that far. But all it's gotten good for us has been quarterfinals. But we've lost something. And right now we're sitting seventh place overall. We're not even, just in terms of this year's results, we're not even in the top 10 of Europe. And if this continues, we could probably see a club like Belgium probably catch up to us, or some of these other clubs that are not too far away. So we've got to be very, very careful. But very disappointing week in Europe. Not a lot of fun. Roberto Martinez, the day I drop this episode, will be doing his call-ups. To be honest with you, I don't really see any big changes. I think in the last match day call-up, he talked about how a lot of people were questioning why was Cancelo called up, why was Joao Felix called up, and he basically said to the point that, you know, he's trying to build a team and having the same players was important. You know, if you remember, Ruben Amorim even came out with the criticism because some of his players weren't selected because, you know, the national team's not where you go to solve players' problems. You go there to be the best players that are playing right now and to represent Portugal. So I'm not really expecting a whole lot of changes. I think Nuno Mendes is still injured, so he's not going to be called up. We're not going to see Renato Sanches get called up because he's been hurt. Any surprises? Maybe Bruma. Maybe Bruma gets the call. I don't see Paulinho or Pote, unfortunately, getting the call. I hope I'm wrong because I'd love to see Pote. I think he could help the team. But I'm just not expecting a lot. And I'll have previews again next week. Of course, Portugal needing just one win to win the group. And then again, the big question I have is what happens after they qualify for next summer's Euros. Does he basically let some players go back to their big European clubs, and does he bring in some new blood to, you know, to maybe spend these last, what, five match days, basically experimenting and giving younger players an opportunity, like a Bruma, like maybe a Paulinho, something like that down the road, not necessarily in this call-up. So that's the good thing about qualifying early, is that it allows Martinez to kind of play around. And by the way, if that does happen, amazing that we would have done it this early and don't have to sweat it, you know, going down to the final match day. So I think that, you know, that's very important. And again, this episode will be coming out after, so I'm not going to really have the opportunity to comment on it, but I will obviously discuss it next week. And of course, you'll also get comments on the PortugueseSoccer.com social media accounts. But let's get going. Of course, we got match day 8 of the Liga Betclic. Everything that's going on Friday with Moreirense taking on Boavista. Rough week for Boavista. I'll talk about that in a few minutes. But they will basically kick off action on Friday. And then you've got 4 matches on Saturday. And then 4 matches on Sunday. And then, of course, we'll begin the international break. But you've got Braga taking on Rio Ave on Saturday. Braga, again, got to be very excited. Rio Ave, a lot of talk about their manager, but they've been a big disappointment so far. Estoril, with Vasco Seabra as manager, will be hosting Benfica. So a big Lisbon area match on Saturday night there in that region. Chaves is also playing on Saturday against Gil Vicente. Gil Vicente is the best offensive team at home. They have scored the most goals at home this season, and they'll be taking on Chaves, which has recorded points in their last 2 matches ever since Moreno took over. And that's been a very, very positive thing for them. And then, of course, we also have Feirense against Vizela. And then Sunday, we've got Fama taking on Guimarães with their new manager, Alvaro Pacheco. Amazing. He was at Estoril, basically sent off, dismissed. And what, a week and a half later, he's now at Vitória. They're hoping that he will resuscitate their hopes. Casa Pia, Estrela Amadora. Then, of course, you got the 2 big clubs at the end. Porto at home to Portimonense. This will attract a lot of attention because a lot of people will be joking that Porto always scores a lot of goals at home against Portimonense. And then, of course, it'll wrap up with Sporting at home in Alvalade against Arouca. And, of course, as we all know, the table is led by Sporting with 19 points, Benfica 18, Porto 16, very tight at the top. You got Boavista with 14, although if I recall, they had a disappointing loss last week. And then you've got Braga in 5th, along with Guimarães, with 13 points each. You have as many as 5-6 different players that have scored 5 goals. And a lot of goals scored after the 90th minute in the Liga, We had a lot of players. I think six matches last week, match day, had players that were sent off. Look, it's exciting when there's as many goals as they are scored after the 90th minute, but there's also been a lot of disappointments and frustrations with the sending off. So it has been a season, a lot of drama, which makes for good TV, but at the same time, it also creates a lot of controversy. To me, I think some of the best matches this weekend, I think, is Chaves versus Gil Vicente. Chaves mostly because of the fact that they've put together two positive results. Can they keep it up? And then my other match of interest is Familia going against Guimarães and their new manager, Alvaro Pacheco. There's not a lot of matches that stick out this week between the big clubs and then another big club. This is in my opinion, what I think I see. Second division report, match day seven. They're one match day behind because remember they had a few weeks ago the second round of the Taça de Portugal. Everything that's going on Friday with Santa Clara taking on Académico do Viseu. You've got three matches on Saturday. You've got four matches on Sunday, and then everything wraps up on Monday night. AVS, managed by Jorge Costa, formerly Vila Furquins last year. They are in first place with 16 points, and they have a four-point lead over the island teams. Marítimo with 12, Santa Clara with 12, and Nacional with 12. So it's good to see the island teams from Madeira and the Azores kind of sticking up close to the top. It's really strange not to have any first division football in Madeira. Madeira, of course, is one of the most beautiful islands in the world, one of the more incredible places to see a plane land because of all the winds. If you've ever seen it, check it out on YouTube. The island teams are competing at the top. And then in fifth place, you have, of course, my team from Torres Vedras. A lot of relatives there, as you know. Turians in fifth place with 11 points, doing very, very well. And then the other team from my part of Minho, the closest second division team from Two Arcos de Valvision, that's, of course, Lenk Vilaverdense. Last place, six matches, only 1 point. They are taking their beating. Vilaverdense has always been a club that's had the resources for, let's say, the third or fourth tier. I always figured them going to the second tier, while it was great, would have been very tough on them. And they are really, really, really taking on their lumps. It has not been very pretty for them so far earlier this year. So that's going to wrap up the first part of my episode. Coming up, I'll have Liga notes from other clubs around Portugal, women's football, players abroad report, as well as the Big Four report. And that'll all be coming up right here next on part two of the PortugueseSoccer.com podcast. Part two of the PortugueseSoccer.com podcast. Welcome back. This is always the part of the episode where I want to take this opportunity to say thank you. And if you're a new listener, please stick around. I do this every week, whether you listen for 10 minutes or for the entire episode of 40, 45 minutes. I've been doing this for over 25 years, your Portuguese expert, giving you my experiences, my thoughts. And I really believe down from my heart, telling it like it is, regardless of who I disappoint, I give it away evenly. And I know sometimes that frustrates people, but I try to be very objective. And again, to support this podcast, please give it a follow on Spotify, obviously iTunes, Google Podcast, Podcast Addict. I also put the audio up on YouTube and give it a like as well. And that would be the greatest way. If you're listening many times and you've always wondered, please go ahead and do that. It would be much appreciated. But let's get going now, talking about part two. And I'm going to really start talking about Liga stuff and really jumping around a bit. First off, some very good news in France. BN Sport has bought the Liga BetClic rights to broadcast the game in that country. That is very positive news. France has some of the biggest immigrant Portuguese population in the world. And that's very good that they have decided to broadcast this. So that was very, very good news. I was saying last week in the episode that I wasn't sure if anybody, them or in England. I think in England, nothing yet. I was wondering if anyone was going to come along, and look what happened a few days later. Someone came along. So let me do this. Let me bring it up again. I hope somebody in England will come along and one of those stations will buy the rights. And who knows, maybe we'll get lucky like we did last week with France. So very good deal for BM Sport to add the Portuguese Liga package. Other Liga news, been getting a lot of attention. First off, a lot of 90th minute later goals. I don't honestly remember so many goals like this from so many teams. We also have had a lot of red cards that have caused a lot of controversy. And look, we had controversy in the Champions League, and obviously we have controversy in the Liga, but that has been, of course, a very sore subject with a lot of people, depending on which side you are on, whether you're the one that is being scored at it after the 90th minute, but or whether you're the one that has a player sent off. But I will tell you this, it sounds like the best thing to do if you're trying to get into Portuguese football is start following it in the 80th minute, because there's just so many things that happen after that point. And also, of course, as I mentioned, Alvaro Pacheco is the new manager of Vitória Guimarães. Vitória, again, has the ability to be a top five club in Portugal, but again, the disappointment of not qualifying for the Europa Conference League, where, to be fair, Vitória, against some of the clubs they play or against some of the clubs that play in the third preliminary round, Vitória is a very big club compared to them with their size and their fan base. But the disappointment is so strong in Minho after what happened with Guimarães and being eliminated, if I recall, by the Norwegian club, that a lot of people are disappointed. But Alvaro Pacheco, the man who likes to wear the beret, he basically has now been installed in the new manager. So he goes from managing Estoril, a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, to going up to Vitória Guimarães and now being in Guimarães. Of course, he spent many years, I think it was at Vizela. Another thing to talk about this week was, of course, the situation with Boa Vista. First, the day of their match last Saturday, the medical staff, I think it was the medical staff or the training staff, basically announced that they weren't going to be working that day because they haven't been paid. And then the day after the match, or that Monday, the stadium staff decided not to work, so they couldn't let the players into the stadium. And if I recall correctly, we had, I think it was Reggie Cannon a few months ago, was complaining about now getting paid. And let me tell you something, folks. Your average football in Portugal, especially one that, if you were to name 20 people that played in Portugal, he's probably not going to be the first 20, maybe even not the first 50 players that you're going to say plays in the first division. A lot of players make maybe less than 100,000 euros to be a professional footballer, especially at the smaller clubs. So much of Portugal and getting players is the promise of an investment for a bigger payday in the future. But Boa Vista's had a lot of economic issues. Obviously, that's the reason why they got in trouble. They then went sent down. They managed to come back up via the tribunal when they thought they were wronged with the whole controversies a few years ago that I'm not going to get into. But Boa Vista, though, has always had issues. And the biggest question now is, what does it mean for this club? Because if they were to manage to finish in Europe, they're going to sell a lot of their players, of course. And then next summer, we're going to have a brand new team. And how many times have I told you that every summer when there's a lot of turnover and then some of these fourth and fifth place clubs go to play in the Europa Conference League, and we've never been to the group stage. A Portuguese club has never played in the Europa Conference League group stage. It's because there's so much turnover. You wind up bringing a brand new team, and before you know it, they're playing these very important matches when they've only been together for a month. And we've had some very disappointing results, as we saw this year with Guimarães and Arouca. So, Boa Vista, hard time salary-wise. We're rooting for them because they are obviously in one of the biggest cities in Portugal. But it has been a very tough time for Boa Vista, and they're having some serious financial issues. And again, I don't know how you solve it. I mean, imagine going to work at a place and you haven't been paid in, I don't know what the situation is here, if it's a few weeks, if it's a month, if it's 2 months. But can you imagine? I've been for it. You know, it's a tough situation. It's a tough situation, and I'm sure if the club could, they would. Or if they're not, you know, it has to be seen why. But you got to feel for Boa Vista, because this is something that you just don't want to see at the first level of, you know. Economics are a big problem in Portugal. A lot of players don't make a lot of money. Clubs lose money, and that's why clubs have to sell players. And that economic system doesn't really change, and Boa Vista's having a very, very tough time. Moving on to women's football. TVI, which is, of course, one of the free channels in Portugal that you don't need a satellite or cable for, they're going to be broadcasting some women's matches, Braga, Sporting, Famalicão, Benfica. So it's really good to see the women's game getting on major television in Portugal. Of course, in Portugal, the Liga Betclic is not shown on, you know, any of the free TV channels in Portugal. You have to have Sport TV or Benfica TV to watch first division matches. The only time in Portugal you'll get to see domestic clubs play is in the Taça da Liga or in the Taça de Portugal, the Portuguese Cup, or of course the Taça de Portugal final, those type of matches. those are really the only time that you'll be able to see your clubs domestically. And then, of course, there's also the matches that are sometimes shown, of course, in Europe. But it's good to see women's football. Again, yet another positive development for the game in Portugal, and I think you just got to be very happy with that. Portuguese manager and player abroad report, João Félix. Of course, he was the interview, was a part of the interview with the Barcelona manager previewing the Porto match, and it seems like he seems to be very comfortable in Barcelona. Obviously, that's, I think, always been his dream club, and things seem to be going better for him there. But he looks happy. And I think if João Félix looks happy, that's good for the Portugal's national team. But that's also because, look, regardless of whether or not you're a Porto and Sporting fan and you maybe don't care about him because he didn't play for your club, we want to see all these players do very well. Ruben Dias continues to be a fantastic player with City, who beat RB Leipzig 3-1 this week. Ruben Dias continuing to show that he is one of the best center backs in the world, and he plays for the Seleção too. So it's just been a lot of fun. Bernardo, last time I checked, was still hurt. So that's a bit of a concern. Jose Mourinho has Roma, again, off to a good start in European competition with 2 wins. So he's doing some great things. Pepa, who last was managing in Brazil, I think he just took a job. I believe it was in Qatar. So he continues to move around. He was, by the way, the former Vitória Guimarães manager last season. So he's been moving around, taking some big opportunities and some jobs. Hopefully this time things will work out for him. And then as far as player and managers abroad, I got to also talk about Bruno Lage has been apparently sacked by his club in Brazil. I've never been a big Bruno Lage fan. I always admired his press conferences, the way, if the press talked to him a certain way, he went back at them. And obviously, we know he had a great time with Benfica when he replaced Rui Vitória. But I don't know. I mean, he did okay at Wolves, but certainly not great. He hasn't done great at this job. I don't know. I've never just been big on Bruno Lage. To me, I don't know why people are down on JJ. He's doing a great job in Saudi Arabia, which, don't knock it. You saw the talent level they have there now. I think JJ has his Saudi team in first place. But I don't know. I'm just not a very big fan of Bruno Lage. I think he's a good manager. He comes across as a good person. But maybe he stepped into the right position at Benfica. But he has been sacked and he's no longer manager. Big Four report again. Braga, my opinion, one of their 3 best nights ever. Best night ever was when they beat Benfica 1-0 at home to advance on aggregate to their first European final. Arthur Jorge, I think, has just done a fantastic job. Manager with the club. I always thought Braga, you know, look over the years, the many different managers they've had in the last 15 years. Jorge Jesus, they've had Paulo Sergio, they've had Paulo Fonseca, Pedro Martins, who I think is still looking for a job. They had Leonardo Jardim. A lot of great managers have been at Braga, and I think this is going to be another good one, Arthur Jorge, except I think this time he's going to stick around longer than the other managers, and he's just done a fantastic job. They are trailing by 6 points behind the leader Sporting, which is a bit of a concern if you're a Braga fan, but again, we've only played 7 match days, a lot of match days to go. Benfica, Di Maria is doubtful for this weekend, but obviously the big story with Benfica is 3 losses already. Last year, they didn't have their first loss with Schmidt, I think it was in the Liga until, the day before New Year's Eve last year. So Benfica, and look, Benfica's still in the hunt. They've got to win their next match against Real Sociedad. If they do that, then if they don't do that, then they've got to start worrying about third place in the Europa League, which is a competition where, by the way, when we talk about the European coefficients, that's how Portugal has regained it. When they don't get a lot of points in the Champions League, sometimes you go to the Europa League and, remember what I talked about, Benfica back-to-back Europa finals, the Porto-Braga final. A lot of those years when we got big points in Europe was because we made it through the Europa League. It wasn't through the Champions League. So who knows, maybe if Portuguese clubs drop down to Europa in the spring, maybe this is a blessing in disguise and maybe they go farther, maybe semifinals, and maybe we pick up those points that we need to try to compete to get into sixth place. But nevertheless, it's been very disappointing. And the one thing I wanted to mention, I think the last time when I was on, I talked about the Taça de Portugal, and I talked about basically about the matches, and I think I said that Benfica was going to be playing on a Thursday But apparently they're actually going to be playing on a Friday. Now, these are matches that are going to be played after the international break. Braga's playing on a Thursday on the 19th of October. Benfica's playing on Friday, as is Porto, because the following week they, of course, got Champions League matches. Saturday, you've got Sporting playing that Saturday, getting ready to play in the Europa that Thursday. So these are most of the TV games that I'm telling you about. Obviously, there's a lot of games in the third round of the Taça de Portugal that do not have television. But Benfica, I think I had said last week they were playing on a Thursday. It's actually a Friday. And again, the third round of the Taça de Portugal will be played after this next international break. FC Porto, I felt bad for Mario Baro making that mistake. Fans could be vicious. Especially, I hope he didn't have a lot of issues on social media. But this is a kid who's trying to make a name for himself. And that had to have been a very tough thing. But Porto very frustrated in the match against Barcelona. But again, same thing to Benfica that I say to Porto, you got all these players, you smack big time money. You got to find a way to score at least one goal. You scored one goal against Barcelona, you would have had a point. Complaining about everything else is fine. I get it, even if it was a bad call, but come on, you're a big club. You got to find a way to score a goal. I'm sorry, that's just the way that I have to say it about all those clubs. But Porto, and of course, Porto also have official announcement last week that they will be building their new academy in Maia. And that's a big thing. And another big thing that got a lot of attention with Porto Benfica last week is the fact that a lot of people were talking about the goalkeeper, Trubin, and whether or not that's been a mistake to sign him. And he's been on the cover because he had such a bad, Champions League match, match day one. And people are complaining because why don't people complain about the media complain about Carmo, David Carmo, who obviously was sold for something like 22.5 million by Braga to Porto, and he has been so far not really panning out. A lot of people feel, all the attention on Trubin and not the attention on Carmo has been bothering a lot of fans. If you're going to criticize Trubin, you need to criticize Carmo's transaction, the amount of money that was spent. But a lot of Porto fans, are very upset. Benfica fans, I should say, are just very upset that Trubin seems to be getting a lot of heat, but how come nobody talks about David Carmo? So I thought that was important to mention. Sporting, their first loss was to Atalanta. So disappointing. They were just clearly the better team, this team from Serie A. But very disappointing. But Sporting still in the hunt. I still expect them to finish a top two. And Diomand, of course, is getting a lot of attention again in the press. So don't be surprised if he gets sold next summer. And I think that's going to be the big attention thing that I think you'll be seeing him a lot in the press. Going to do my mailbox now. And again, just a reminder, if you have any questions, hit me up on PSoccerCom at Twitter or Facebook. Yes, you could slide in and give me messages. Or, of course, you can send it to PSoccerCom at gmail.com. And every week I'll pick out two or three questions. This one comes from Neil from Toronto. Hello, Neil. I was speaking to a colleague at work who is from Bosnia, and he says that whenever a Bosnian club team is scheduled for UEFA matches in the Conference League and the Europa Conference League, that their domestic league matches are rescheduled that week for a later date. Basically, the Bosnian League wants its teams to have ample time to prepare for UEFA competitions. They really take coefficients in the competition seriously, as the whole league wants their teams to do well in UEFA. Do you think Portugal can do the same to help the Big Four in European competitions, or are we just too stubborn to do so? FC Sarajevo is the top team in Bosnia, and I know, of course, they've got some. I know that team you're talking about, Neil. They got some history making the UEFA Cup semifinals. I think it was in 84-85 and quarterfinals in 71-72. Well, Neil, I kind of answered it to you, but let me answer it to the fans. First off, they have started doing that. Let's not forget that Braga had their, I don't know if it was their third or fourth match day pushed to later, so that they can get ready for that second leg of their Champions League playoff, which they were very successful in, as we know. And they wound up playing that makeup match during the international break. And I think last year in the spring, I think Benfica had a match move so that they could play. I'm trying to remember which date it was. But the point is that they are trying, they are starting to do that. I think we're starting to see some examples in the past year. And I think that, the next opportunity for this to happen will be when we get to match day 5 or 6 It'd be curious to see if any of those matches will be moved so that some of these clubs have an extra 4 to 5 days to get ready, especially a club like Benfica, who, you know, the way things are going, are in, you know, in danger of not finishing in the top two. So it remains to be seen if they're going to be consistent at this. But so far, at least with Braga, they've done it, and that was a success. Now, what's going to happen is if you have a congested schedule, that could be a problem, but it's going to be on a case-by-case basis. So they started doing it with Braga, is the best I could say, and we'll see if that happens later on this year when clubs get to their final match days, and it's very important. Some leagues do it. I know in Holland they do this. They did this last spring. And, of course, Holland, as you know, has managed to jump over us into a sixth place. So really a great question. Thank you so much, Neil. I had somebody also send me a comment. They were talking about why did Braga last week – I was saying why was Braga playing on Thursday and not on Friday. And I thought part of it could have been that it had something to do with basically just them wanting an extra day to get ready to play away in the Champions League, which obviously turned out to be very successful. But basically what happened last week is they just didn't want that, you know, because the match was in Amadora, which is in the Lisbon region, kind of getting in the way in the region with the fact that you've got a big Clásico. So if you notice, a lot of times in Portugal, they try to avoid Porto Boavista, Sporting Benfica. A lot of times you'll not see them play. At least this is what they do when they do the Liga schedule draw. They will make sure that only one of those teams is playing that weekend and not both. Because the truth of the matter is, when a Sporting and a Benfica and a Porto play, there's a lot of police involved, the visiting supporters, especially if they're playing a Clásico. So good point there. I should have probably mentioned it a little bit stronger, but the reason why Braga played Thursday was because of the fact of the Clásico on Friday, and that makes a lot of sense when it comes to resources. And by the way, a lot of people say, God, I would love to go to a Clásico. But I got to be honest with you, I know a lot of people, I get scared. A lot of people close their shops early if the street happens to be the street that the police are using to transport the visiting fans. There's a lot of police that go on in a match day involving big clubs in Portugal, and I think that explains it. Danny Souza writes to me from Boston, why so many late goals this season? Amazing. And yeah, I've already touched on this twice this season. You know, Danny, you're right. If it happens this weekend where we have three or four matches and goals have been scored after the 90th minute, it's a lot. It's great for television. And by the way, we know that they're trying to centralize TV rights. But yeah, it's been very noticeable that there's been a lot of matches. I think Porto has had like five goals scored after the 90th minute. Three of them, I think, were winners or something like that. So yeah, it's happened a lot this year, and I guess the lesson to be learned if you want to get into Portuguese football is wait until the 80th minute and watch the last 20 minutes of a match, because I think that would be great. And again, RTP International in the States broadcasts one match a week, so if you're in Canada or USA or really anywhere around the world, is my understanding, you get RTP International and you want to check out Portuguese football and you have that channel, give it a shot, because I think you might like it as well. And you know, that's something to think about. Gonna wrap up my episodes like I always do. And I'm gonna talk about my club, Atlético dos Arcos. They played two matches this past week. And they won both matches. They played the other match this past week on Thursday because of, you know, they had to play 2 weeks when the Taça de Portugal that weekend. So the rest of the schedule in that district's fifth tier was still being played. But they had to reschedule their match to play the second round of Taça de Portugal, which unfortunately they lost to the club from the Mafra area, Malveira. But bottom line is they won their two matches this week. They've only had one draw this season. You got three teams in the group with 12 points that are tied for first, and then you got Arcos right behind them with 10 points. So three teams with 12, Arcos with 10. The only thing disappointing is that the dreaded team on the other side of the river, that I'm not even going to, I'm going to be nice on this podcast and not say anything nice about that town, but Punta Barca, that's all I'll say. They are one of the teams that has 12 points out of 12 so far. So it looks like the rivalry between Atlético dos Arcos and Punta Barca is on this year. And I look forward, as always, to seeing what's going to come of that. But this weekend, let me see, who are they playing this weekend, Atlético dos Arcos? It's match day six. And this weekend, Atlético dos Arcos will be going to Cerveira. which beat us out a few years ago, and they got promoted to the fourth tier. And look at them, they're back down now in the fifth tier. That happens a lot. Cerveira this year is in the 11th place with only 3 points. So hopefully Atlético dos Arcos will take care of business. But again, Arcos sitting in fourth place, but only 2 points behind the leaders. And let me see who they're playing the following match day. Still no derby yet. The following match day, they play a club called Linenses. Anyway, folks, as always, thank you so much for listening. This has been episode 191 of the PortugueseSoccer.com podcast. And as I always say, and I really mean it, please take care of yourselves. Please take care of your families. And I'll talk to you next week. Ciao, everybody.